This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PCs and servers and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. It's Friday, October 14th, 2003. It's 10:04 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. It's time for Geek Speak. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. My name is John Tracy. Doesn't quite sound like Lyle, does it? Please keep in mind that the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. This morning, we will be reviewing Apple's newest version of OS X, codenamed Panther. We will welcome you to join our conversation. The numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877 or you can go to geekspeak.org, click on the geeks, and then send a message. We will open the phones now. So if you have a question about Panther, please call in and join our discussion. The numbers again are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. This is Geek Speak. My name is John Tracy. In the air room with me are geeks. Right now we have... Who do we have? We have Miles Elam. Miles Elam is a student of English literature and currently is a man in search of a cause to be champion of. Also in the room today, we have Lyle Troxell. He's a father. He's a husband. He's normally the host of Geek Speak, and he currently works at UCSC as the Arts Administrative Systems Specialist. Oh, who had to turn his own microphone on.
You're doing great, John.
And today we have special guest Michael Paracci, who is the campus rep for Apple at UCSC. Welcome, Michael.
Hi, good morning.
All right, so last week, Apple released their latest operating system, Panther, or OS 10.3. Our normal host... Are you normal?
I'm not that normal, no.
Anyway, Lyle and Geek Lyle Troxell has bravely installed this on his titanium laptop to bring us his views on what is different.
It was such a challenge. I've got a whole story on how I did it.
All right. Well, what is the good, the bad, and the way cool about Panther?
Okay, first off, the install process for me was just, it was a mess. I've, over the last few days, been trying to spend enough time at work to make copies of my data on other places. And I've got 10 megabit Ethernet inside the office, and I was trying to copy stuff over that. And we're talking about a full drive, so 40 gigs of data. And you need some space to install, and I was really nervous about losing information. When I switched over to Jaguar, I did a clean install, and I mistakenly erased some data that I hadn't backed up that I thought I had. So in any case, yesterday I really got serious with it because, well, I had to be the person on air talking about the Panther product, and I figure I better play with it before I actually do so. So I got serious and spent a lot of time yesterday trying to back up, and unfortunately, I probably went the wrong routes. One thing I did is, and you can do this with any of the titaniums, I think the power, the iBooks as well. You can, when you start them up, you can hold down the T key, and it turns into a FireWire drive. So I used my titanium, which is my primary machine, started as a FireWire drive, and then connected up to a server in the office that had enough space, or almost had enough space. And I think everything's there. But it doesn't matter, because after the long story and everything of trying to back things up, nothing was lost. Everything was fine. So that's a good news. But still, if you're doing this, if you go to Panther, make sure you back up because you can lose data. And the install process took a lot longer than I heard it was going to take. I did the archive and install. And Michael, what is archive install normally? How long does it normally take? You know,
it can vary. It really depends on the condition of the hard drive and how much space you have and how much it needs to sort of work with.
Yeah.
It's a neat feature because it'll install a clean OS but keep all your stuff there. At the same time, you can still run into some slight issues just with whatever the drive condition is.
Yeah. I had heard that like a two-hour process is what you'd expect for the CDs. And I was running real late on, I wanted to make a final backup last night. I finally gave up on my secondary backup, just hoping that my primary was going to be okay. So at home, I probably, let's say exactly 3 o'clock, I inserted the 3 o'clock in the morning last night, or this morning, I inserted the disk one of the three disks you need for Panther install and started the process. And then I tried to sleep throughout the night while keeping an eye on the machine to click go on the next button. And 7:30 this morning, so 4.5 hours, I was able to actually install the second disk. So the first disk for me took that long. And there wasn't a point where the machine was waiting for me. I was actually able to slightly sleep so that I come up, and sure enough, 10 minutes to go until it wanted my attention again. So 4.5 hours is a long time. I don't know why that is. I'm a heavy user. My machine's pretty full. It's probably a very defragmented drive. Those things probably led to it being
since,
a long time.
Since you backed up the drive, did you erase the drive before you installed it?
I didn't. I couldn't rely upon my backups being there, and therefore I didn't do that. But the archive and install should do the same thing, I think.
It should, yeah. But it always is best, especially with a really big version of the OS, to really erase if you can.
So maybe if I run into problems, I might do that again anyway.
Well, so now that you have it installed,
What do I like?
What are your impressions of it?
It's great. You know, the biggest feature, the one you're going to hear so much about, is Exposé. And what this is, if you're a user that has a lot of applications or a lot of windows of one application open, which I am, I normally have 6 or 7 applications open with multiple windows, you start having a difficulty of trying to find the window you want. And so in OS X, there's a thing called Exposé, and basically what it allows you to do is push a quick button, and it's set up by default to be F9 and F10 and F11. And F9, what it does is it takes all the windows that are currently on any of the applications and it shrinks them so you can see all of them. It kind of makes a patchwork of them on the screen. And it shrinks it down and kind of grays out everything. And then you can move your mouse over any of the small windows now, and you'll see the title of the window and the application name, I think. I'm not sure if the application names are. And you can switch. What's really cool is that normally, even if they're shrunk down, you can't read the text, but you can definitely recognize the different things, because /., for example, looks different than my inbox and my mail client. And I can recognize them even when they're really small. So it's a great feature. It allows you to navigate really fast, and it looks really cool.
What if you wanted to just get to your desktop? Is there a way to just get rid of all the windows?
Yeah, the F9 key does all the applications, shrinks them small. The F10 key does only the application you're currently in. And then the F11 key just pushes everything out of the way and allows you to see the desktop. You can double-click something on the desktop, move something on the desktop, and then all your windows came back in.
I'm looking at the function keys on my titanium laptop here, and F8, F9, F10, and F11, those are the only ones that don't actually do anything already on the titanium. What if I'm using those for other applications?
Well, you can reassign it to anything you want, including hot corners and other key commands. And also, you have those function keys on your titanium, John, that they all function as function keys. They also function as titanium keys. You just have to hit the function key, the FN key at the bottom left. In any case, Rendezvous, great. Really, really love it. I mean, in fact, right there by itself, I would go to this operating system.
For Rendezvous?
Yeah.
Or for Exposé?
For Exposé, excuse me.
Rendezvous is the, what is Rendezvous?
It's kind of like a close network chatting service. Like AIM or Yahoo Instant Messenger.
So that's one thing you liked. What are some other things you liked about it?
Okay, so the Finder's new. If you're familiar with... Okay, everything's new from OS 9 or OS 8 or something.
Maybe that's a good place to start. What are the differences between this and the older OS 10?
Okay, so the older OS 10, the Finder windows had buttons across the top that you could add to and remove from. And it was kind of like your shortcuts could be up there that you used a lot. So your home directory is up there, your documents directory is up there by default, and some other things you could add up there, like your applications folder. And when you clicked on that, you navigated into the machine just like you double-clicked in a shortcut. They took that away, and they put it over on the left-hand side. And the reason that's nice is there's a view called three-column view. I think it's called three-column view, but it's column view. And the basic concept of it, and it's kind of hard to explain, it's kind of like Microsoft's Explorer, in as much as it has a folder directory listing on the left-hand side. And then there's a next pane on the right. And as you click a folder on the left, the pane on the right shows the contents of it. And you click on one of those folders, it shows the contents on the next pane. And it kind of scrolls off to the right as you're viewing.
Okay, now this is different because on the old three-column view, you would have you'd have a folder. When you clicked on it, it would bring you over to the next column, and then it would bring you over to the next column. But if you had like 4 columns open and your window couldn't hold that, it would move those off, so you suddenly couldn't see those anymore.
And in fact, if you had a shortcut being really deep in your directory structure, and when you clicked on it and went to that folder, you could still scroll to the left all the way back to the hard drive. And it got kind of confusing to where you were. So now that the shortcuts and the favorites are over on the left-hand side, they always stay on the left-hand side, when you click on one of those folders, that becomes the starting point of the column view folders. So it's really kind of confusing unless you've played with OS X and kind of know column view. But it does have some good features in that regard. Now, I don't know if it's worth the money necessarily. I don't know if I would have done this if it was my personal money. Since I work at the university and I support people at the university that are going to have this client, I need to know it. So I had to do it in that regard. But how much does it cost? Not that we're supposed to mention cost, but what's the...
The consumer price is $129, and it's a full version, so you can use it to upgrade your current OS or install onto a machine. The education price, for those who are students, staff, or faculty at an institution, it's $79.
So it's a lot cheaper for education. It's still, you know, it's still an expense, and you don't need it. OS X is a pretty stable, good operating system. And currently, you don't need to go to this operating system at all because nothing is specific to it. But in the future, people will stop supporting the older clients and, you know, moving forward makes sense.
So now this is some of the things we see on the surface of the new operating system. What are some of the things underneath?
Well, kind of underneath, and I'll answer this before Michael. You know, Michael probably knows a little bit more about the operating system than I do. One of the things it has is hot sweat switching users or active, what's it called? The user switching?
Fast user switching.
Fast user switching. And basically the concept is, multiple people can be logged in on the machine at the same time in different spaces. And this means that I can log onto the computer as myself and have all my documents and everything. Someone else can come along and log into the computer without logging me out. That means, let's say I am downloading something on my system and then my wife wants to check something out. So she can log into her account and check her email and do all these things while my stuff's going on in the background on my account. Now, of course, it will slow the machine down and everything. But the concept behind it is that you don't actually have to get out of the computer. You don't have to log out of the computer and close all your applications to let someone else use it. And there's some nice it's useful in as much as in a teaching and learning environment where an environment where the users are not the administrators. You have administrators that come around. They can come by and do installs and other things to the machine without kicking the person off of it, which is normally required when you want to do heavy maintenance on the machine.
That's really nice in a lab space where you don't want to bring the machine down for hours while you do something.
Exactly. It does make a lot of sense. What are some other cool things? Mm-hmm.
As with every version of the OS, speed has always helped a little bit. There are some aspects of the Finder actually sort of under the hood which have been redesigned, which you don't necessarily see. There's the aspect of File Vault, which is a new feature in Panther. And
explain File
Sure,
Vault.
Certainly. File Vault, the idea behind it is that your home directory can be encrypted on the fly, such that you are using your machine, you log out, File Vault will kick in, encrypt all your data, such that if anyone were to steal your machine, they could try to hack into your home directory, so to speak, but they wouldn't be able to. It's incredibly secure. So that's something that really happens in the background.
Now, there's been some problems with it. It's actually some people have lost data this way.
There have been some issues, and there was an update, 10.3.1. It's a free update. You just download it, and it fixes some of the issues with FireVault.
I'm not turning FireVault on until a ways from now, until people have tested it, because it sounds like a nightmare. If you do lose your data, it's gone.
I have heard they're still looking into that. It's not completely fixed.
You mentioned speed, Michael. Excuse me, John, but you mentioned speed, and sure enough, applications launch a lot faster. Eudora, for example, always kind of took a while to launch, and it's on like right away. So I'm going to launch Eudora right now, and I'll tell you when it's actually running.
Oh, there it is.
Okay, Eudora is up and running right now. So that period of time launched Eudora, opened my inbox. If people are used to Eudora on OS X, it normally takes a little while. And I just received mail, as you can hear from my sound alert.
So we've talked a bit about what there is. Are there any things that aren't there that you were expecting or that you would have liked to have seen? Or are there changes they made?
There's something that I don't like very much. In system preferences, you used to be able to click on a thing called network. And there was two different things for network and internet. There was internet, and that had to do with your connection to the network and your connection type ways of connecting, like if you're using a modem or a LAN connection or a wireless. But there was also this thing called network, and network was more about if I click in a Word document, if I click on a web URL, it will launch a browser. And to choose which browser that was in OS X, it was in a thing called network in the system preferences. Now that's removed. It's not a system preference at all. You can't find it anywhere. And in fact, you can find it inside of Safari, which is Apple's default web browser now. So inside Safari, if you go to preferences, you can say, I want Safari or some other browser to be my default browser. Okay? So that application now controls the operating system's interface. It kind of makes sense from a user's perspective that I think of the web and I think of Safari. But if you want to be using Mozilla, for example, as your default, you have to open Safari, then switch to Mozilla as your default. And that's a little weird. It's like how Microsoft did it for a long time with IE, and it caused IE's growth to be a little better than Netscape's just by default because it was that way.
Because most people don't want to have to go in and switch it.
Yes. The other thing is mail. The email client is the same thing, and you have to use OS X's mail client, which is called Apple Mail, and to switch to what opens your default mail client. So it's I don't like that, but someone will probably produce something that's very convenient.
You're listening to Geek Speak on KUSP Santa Cruz. My name is John Tracy. In the air room with me are geeks. Where is Miles? Miles has gone out.
Miles and Sean are working on the news.
All right. In with me today are Lyle Troxell and special guest Michael Paracci. We're supposed to be doing a 9:15 break. You'll have to pardon me. This is my first time flying it this year. I haven't.
For quite a while. You haven't filled in for me in a long time.
I haven't.
It's really a pleasure, I got to say, John, to be on this side of the desk. It's so less stressful. I mean, I'm sitting here kicking back and reading internet stuff and talking about things, and you're stressing out about having to do all the legality stuff. So I appreciate you doing the show today. Thank you.
I'm not stressing out about it because I can't find it, so we'll just go on.
Well, I'll continue a little bit. We're talking about Panther today.
Yes.
And we're taking calls?
Please. We are taking calls. If you have questions regarding Panther or any Apple operating system, we might as well open up the mic. If you have just questions or concerns, go ahead and call us. We are at 476-2800, or you can call toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can also go to geekspeak.org, click on The Geeks, and then send a message. We will be opening the phones. They are open now if you'd like to call in. If you have questions about our topic or other questions, please don't hesitate to call.
And Panther, of course, is Apple's newest operating system. It's a it's a version add-on to the OS X version, and it's version 10.3. And this morning, I think, or maybe yesterday, 10.31 was released. So it now finally has its first, like, it's been released fix. And operating systems, lots of people will not actually install an operating system until that little extra has been added.
I'm definitely that way. I'll always wait till, like, you know, 10.3.1.1b or something, and then I'll install it.
Yeah, well, I had a great time doing it. I've seen some horror stories online about people that didn't have a good time.
Let's talk a little bit about that. There have been some problems installing 10.3.nothing. What are some of the things you've seen?
Well, at least one person's mentioned that after installing, they weren't able to actually run the machine. And it didn't come back after install disk went in. And to my understanding, the people that are seeing this kind of problems are power users that do a lot of tweaking to their machine. And it kind of makes sense because Apple is, you know, really focusing on the consumer. And they're not focusing on the geek in their operating system, typically. So when people do a lot of what's called, well, hacking, basically, but basically adding features and different things to their operating system, when those things are enabled, and then you install Panther, you can run into problems. So the recommendation is to start disabling that stuff before you upgrade and then reinstall those things. And I'm talking about additional system preferences or applications that start up when you log in. So a couple things that's recommended. And if you're going to be doing this upgrade yourself, go to os10hints.com. It's a great reference for people that are running into issues with the operating system. In general, what I've seen is you go up to, in the old OS X version, you go to startup, and you just remove everything that's in there. And that will stop applications from loading at startup. And that I did for myself with a few things. I didn't turn off everything because I was kind of curious. I didn't turn off Palm Sync. And sure enough, I can't sync right now. There's errors happening. And what's recommended on OS X hints is just to reinstall the Palm operating system, Palm Sync application.
I understand there's also a problem with external FireWire drives. Do you know?
There was a problem with FireWire 800 drives specifically that has been addressed, apparently. It had to do with the Oxford 911 chipset, I believe, where with Panther and a FireWire 800 drive and the issue, you have a greater potential for losing data on the drive. And from my research, fixes have been released, firmware updates for the respective companies for the drives, as well as the 10.3.1 update, which also addresses the issue.
And the 10.3.1 upgrade does say, you know, this will fix that FireWire issue, but still get driver support. Because
firmware updates, yeah.
Basically, it's kind of a combined error problem where the firmware and the operating system are doing things unkind to each other, and so both parties should really be fixed. This basically means if you're using a FireWire drive, most importantly, don't have it connected while you're installing the operating system. That's just by default, don't do that. In fact, never do that on any operating system, including Mandrake Linux, because, well, that's a CD drive. In any case, it's not a good idea. Make sure to disconnect peripherals. In fact, most peripherals, go ahead and disconnect them. If you've got a LAN connection, I just say disconnect all peripherals when you're installing the operating system, except for like a USB keyboard or something.
Unless you're doing a network install. Can you do an OS 10.3 network install?
Depending on how you have, if you have it set up such that you have extra utilities set up on some sort of server that would allow you to do a net-based install, certainly.
Okay, because I know there's a lot of labs out there that use things like, use different applications that will basically re-image the hard drive every
exactly.
time it started up.
Yeah.
You asked about errors that took place, and one other thing that I'll mention, and then keep in mind, I haven't looked at the operating system completely. I've only been playing with it since 8 this morning, and although I looked at it a little bit earlier on, and I'm only on like 4.5 hours of interrupted sleep, so I'm not really there consciously. But one error that I also found that I didn't like is that the printers are gone. My printers are all gone. Now, that's not a big deal because I can add my printers back in when I get back to the network that has the printers, but it's kind of an annoyance to have to reinstall those printers, though I'd rather them just remove them than having some kind of catastrophic event happen.
A neat addition, actually, to Panther is GIMP Print. It's a set of open-based, if you can correct me if I'm wrong, printer drivers for a whole bunch of printers out there.
They've included that in it.
It is now part of the standard install. And in fact, if you want, save some space and time, uncheck all the other driver installs, like the 300 megabytes of Epson printer drivers, and just do the GIMP print and everything.
And how do you uncheck them?
As part of the install, you can actually customize it.
Wow,
there's a button for customize, and you can just uncheck whatever you don't want.
You can also uncheck all the different languages that
exactly.
will install.
I wonder if I slept through that.
It's at the very beginning when you're first installing. You can customize.
Yeah.
Yes, I've used GIMP Print in the past to be able to print to a wireless print server that we have set up at our house, and it's so nice, mm-hmm. but not terribly reliable. So maybe with 10.3 it'll be a little better.
Another feature that I really love about the operating system, and this is something that Apple's decided to do, which is I find kind of phenomenal that they're going to do this, but they are accepting crash log reports from any application. So, for example, I mentioned that I run Eudora, and one of the features of Eudora is this kind of obscure feature most people don't use. It's called EPS folders, and it's this idea of sharing stuff through Eudora. So, in any case, we've disabled that feature at work, and I deleted that folder in my cleanup attempts yesterday to do backups. So when I launched Eudora, it opened and said, you know, your folder's missing for this thing, and I went, I just want to disable it. So I go to the EPS, I think it's called EPS.
ESP.
ESP folder to disable it, or the preferences, and it crashed Eudora. So Eudora crashed. I'm, you know, used to that. Then Macintosh, the operating system, then pops up a little bug report. You know, this application's crashed. Here's the trace of what happened. And go ahead and write a comment about how this happened and send it to Apple. So Apple is now collecting bug reports, I guess, on any application that crashes on their OS. That is a paradigm shift in support for operating systems.
I was one I wish other OS manufacturers would emulate, not specifically to name any.
So we mentioned GIMP real quick, the GIMP print. Mm-hmm. GIMP print was available. You could install it. It's been buildable for OS 10 for a while, and it finally just came by default with Panther. But GIMP print's great because there's a whole collection of people that out there that are developing print drivers for open source operating systems, specifically Linux. And this is called GIMP print under the GNU license. And in general, it is really well supported. Any new printers, actually some manufacturers now actually release drivers for it. But now that Apple's doing that, that means that more printers drivers will be available for Linux because they have to be available for Apple because Apple has a large market share. So it's kind of an interesting play that we're going to see a lot with this Unix hybrid of Apple operating system.
Great. Is there anything you found missing? Are there any features have changed?
The network setting things I thought was really irritating.
But I mean, is there anything you thought, oh, great, they should obviously include this?
I know there are, and I can't think of it at the top of my head. Michael?
Nor can I, really.
Really? Okay, let me see if I can remember one. I'll try to think of that as the show progresses.
Do you have a recommendation? I mean, if I'm an average user, which I pretty much am now, do you have a recommendation as to should you run right out and buy 10.3? If you're running OS 10.2 right now and it's going fine, should you run right out and get this?
I'd feel your craving. If you've got that craving because you're kind of a geek at heart, even though you don't really do that kind of geekiness, and you kind of want to see that, you know, if you see Exposé, you're going to go, oh, yeah, I got to have this operating system. So to some degree, yes. But do you want to run out and get it right now? I'd go ahead and wait until a couple patches. It's kind of nice to have the patches on the CD, so when you actually install the operating system the first time, you don't have to then connect to the network to upgrade the patches.
And then later, if you have to do a reinstall, you don't have to worry about
it. Yeah, it's kind of nice to have those most recent discs. So I might wait another week, but I love it so much at this point that I'd be upset if I had to go back.
Right. Yes, I can understand. Exposé seemed like it was worth the price of admission for me. But like you said, I'm going to wait until a few generations have gone by. You are listening to Geek Speak. We will continue our discussion with Panther in just a moment. And before that, we'll be doing the news. You're listening to Geek Speak. My name is John Tracy. The geeks this morning, we have now a full house. We have Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland. Sean, welcome.
Hi.
Let me switch the mic over here. Here, Sean, we can share this one.
Good morning.
Good morning. Lyle Troxell and our special guest, Michael Perotti, from UCSC. He's an Apple representative up there. This program is supported by a grant from Cruzio, providing internet access, including DSL and spam filters, for home and office throughout Santa Cruz County. Information about Cruzio membership is available online at cruzio.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Central Coast Public Radio, KSP. My name is John Tracy, and you are listening to Geek Speak. If you have questions or comments, the numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Our email address is geeks@geekspeak.org, and you can get there from our webpage. You can head on up and just click on Send the Geeks a Message, and it'll send us a message. So we didn't do this earlier because our newsworthy geek, Sean, was delayed in traffic. He's here now, so we'd like to start with the news, and after the news, we'll be taking your calls. All right. So, Sean?
Well, Miles. I'll start off. This is actually coming on the heels of all the coverage for the recent legislation that's going on for penalties for people who share movies over the Internet. I just wanted to mention, because I don't think it's been talked about very much before, that Dianne Feinstein is one of the co-sponsors of this bill. If you don't like the fact that, you know, having a movie on your hard drive is getting pretty close to the penalty for Grand Theft Auto, feel free to send a message to her.
Huh, I think there needs to be some education with this bill, because there's a lot of people still out there who don't realize that this is pirating and it's not legal.
Yes, it is pirating.
Yes.
At the same time, a 3-year jail sentence.
And this is for if you just have a
if you have it on your hard drive, even if it hasn't even been shared by someone, if it's just publicly available.
And this is first offense?
Miles, is this any video on your hard drive or ones that you don't own?
These would be movies. Yeah,
movies that you don't own?
Right.
So if you have
whether or not you have the DVD or not. Whether you've bought it or not. This is if it's on your hard drive.
Oh, man.
So if you've made an unauthorized copy of your movie that you bought.
If I made a backup copy and I'm working with it, but I put it into a shared folder directory by accident, or people who don't know the issues with having, you know, their folder shared, or someone has PHP and like some Morpheus, like their kid puts it on there, but it's in the same directory.
But if it's not in a shared folder, it's just in the My Documents folder on your hard drive, you're okay?
No, if it's on your hard drive, right?
If it's anywhere on your hard drive.
Well, if it's publicly viewable. So if it's shared in some way.
Okay. So as long as you put it into a folder.
Well, if you're a good enough hacker, anything's publicly viewable.
Anyway, let's move on.
Pioneer has released their 8X version of their DVD recorder. Pretty crazy, 8X now.
Is there media?
The drive won't even be around until December.
Okay.
And that's because 8X speed still has to be ratified by the DVD forum, of which Sharp and Pioneer are members. So it looks like this is a one-off speed. The rewritable speed is 4X. And the drive also supports Plus-R and Plus-RW at 4X speed as well.
That's very
so,
nice.
So in time for the holidays, but at the last minute. Kind of interesting. We'll see.
So for that movie Burning Geek on your list... Keep your eyes up. And
I got to say, Pioneer just makes great DVD. I mean, they invented the standard, so.
Yeah, they have some great technologies to backing them up.
I'm looking forward to that drive, yeah.
Yeah. Quick blurb. The first reproducing artificial virus has been created.
Is this the computer virus or biological virus?
Biological virus. Oh, created from scratch, created virus, and it can replicate.
Is it harmful to human beings? No. It's just it's basically the simplest thing they could possibly make. But
do you have why we're pursuing this technology?
I am not qualified to answer that question.
Because it's there?
Yeah, just like every other technology, I guess.
All right. And who's doing this?
It was saying that the article was saying Craig Venter's research group, although I'm not personally familiar with them.
Craig, be careful, please, for the rest of humanity. Thank you.
Other groups have tried doing this, but they were able to do it within 2 weeks.
Now, you had news we didn't put on air last week about the rail virus, I think it was called?
Yes, this was having to do with cancer-preventing material or cancer-fighting materials.
I thought this was fascinating that I haven't really heard much about this. Can you give a quick blurb about it?
Railvirus is a type of virus that is found all around us. It's found in small puddles of water and the like. And what happens is researchers have found that it will attack cancer viruses while normal cells are left fine. Cancer cells while normal cells are left intact. This is basically because when a cell has become cancerous, its virus-fighting abilities are lessened greatly. But the human body can handle the railvirus quite well. It's been evolving along with it for millions of years. So what you have is you'll inject the railvirus into someone, and in a couple weeks, if there's no cancer, it will be flushed out of your system. It's a normal process. However, if there is cancer in your system, if it's injected into a cancer site, what they've been finding is that it will attack a cancer cell and keep reproducing, basically reproducing in only cancer cells until the cancer cells have all been destroyed.
Because the body's normal defenses can keep it from reproducing.
Right, and they've been finding that...
So it's starving the cancer cells that are starving your normal cells.
No, it's not starving them. It's actually attacking them.
It's attacking them.
Yeah.
The same way a virus would.
Right. It's using the cancer cell as a replication.
That's the problem with cancer is it starves the cells around it.
Right.
It consumes the nutrients to so that it can continue to produce.
Yeah, and it's been they've had good results with breast, prostate, pancreatic, and brain cancer.
Interesting.
So a good portion of... Yeah.
Maybe I think it's fascinating. I think it's also amazing to me because it makes sense. We no longer drink from stagnant water or ponds or pools or things like that. We get all of our water chlorinated.
Speak for yourself,
John. Yeah. Well, the American...
Feel all safe in the mound.
The American penchant for absolute cleanliness or sterility may have something to do with why cancer rates are higher in the U.S. than many other parts of the world. Who knows?
Thank you.
Sean? Yeah, there's some interesting news in the world of display technology. Of course, we're seeing LCD technology just booming. It's everywhere. And for good reason, because people need to get rid of their CRTs. The cathode ray tubes throw a lot of radiation at your face, you know, and they're big and bulky and very heavy. So... the percentage of LCDs are up 223% over CRTs. But their new technology called organic light-emitting displays looks like it's going to one-up LCD technology, and it's going to be the next generation of that display technology.
What are the advantages?
It's called light-emitting displays. And basically, the way they work is very, very complicated.
So it's a new form of LED?
Yeah. They're brighter. You can see the images much clearer, especially from side angles. Although they have problems with blue still. But basically, it's an organic polymer material, kind of like the light emitting diodes. You know how bright those are.
Right.
But these can be extremely thin and light, and like I said, a wide viewing angle. So and also 3D technologies seem to be coming around now. Some interesting things are happening in that realm. Of course, Sharp launched the Actius 3D RD, RD 3D notebook computer with a monitor that shows 3D without any sort of...
With no medium.
With no glasses. So basically it contains two thin film transistor panels that are separated by a parallax barrier. And the notebook directs the pixel images to two separate regions. And your eye receives at a different angle.
I would imagine the greater the parallax, the greater the distance between the two screens, the more 3D imagery you get.
Right, right.
Interesting.
And your human brain can interpret that. It's enough.
I would assume you would have to sit in front of the screen. There's not much in the way of moving side to side.
No, yeah, you're probably straight on.
It's always... Keyboard 4 up? 5 up.
Now try.
Hey.
No. No, you're still not there.
So, I can't remember my joke now. Never mind.
That's been a lie.
Two other 3D technologies are IO2 technology, which is developing a display that illuminates the air to create an image in 3D, believe it or not, and Actuality Systems. They have Actuality's Perspective Spatial 3D Display Technology, uses a rotating projection lens to create an image that appears to occupy 3D space in a transparent dome.
A rotating projector. Oh, okay. In a transparent dome.
Yeah.
So, but you have to have a dome display for the image to project on?
No, it says it does it into space.
Interesting. That's always interesting to me because it seems like in order to see light, you have to have...
I guess it does. A rotating projection lens, but it doesn't say what it's projecting it onto.
It seems like it has to have some sort of medium to, for the light.
It just says that appears to occupy 3D space.
Interesting.
It's magic. Just like my microphone working now.
Yeah, it works better when you plug it in.
I've heard that.
So, yeah, the display technologies to become very cool in the next two to five years.
Excellent.
Okay, people are going to be able to ditch their landline, their PacBell phone service, and just get a cell phone. One of the things that's helping this is the FCC has approved a bill, 5-0, that would allow consumers to take their landline phone numbers and transfer them to their cell phone, to a cell phone. This is set to happen on November 24th for major markets, and for smaller markets, local phone companies have until May 24th to comply with it.
Now, this is different from the previous bill, then, that allowed you to, when you switched carriers, you could take your phone
number
with you.
Right, this is more than just cell phones.
This is being able to take your landline.
Yeah, this is being able to change the phone number that you've had for years and just say, oh, I'm tired of having a landline, I'm going to have a cell phone. This has some controversy in that phone companies are upset that, one, wireless phone companies or cell phone companies are going to be taking away their business, and there's no way for them, there's no corollary. There's no take a cell phone number and put it, turn it into a landline.
Interesting. And how do the landline companies, SBC and all that, feel about this?
Oh, they're quite upset.
Yeah.
Or at least, yeah, from what I've been reading, they're very upset about it. But so far, about 5.8 million people have already deferred the landline just to have a cell phone. I'm one of them. And more and more people are doing that. And it's estimated that 2 to 3 million more will follow suit in 2 years after this ruling.
All right.
Probably shouldn't be mentioning Windows on a Panther show, right?
Please. No, we need the other perspective.
Guess what? There are a bunch of fixes available. And these are for some rather critical security flaws.
Wait, security flaws in Windows?
Believe it or not.
Well, Miles, that joke hasn't been old for like a month.
Yeah, you're right. It got old a long time ago.
This update fixes at least 8 security issues. And I'm not going to go into detail, but you can go up to windowsupdate.microsoft.com to grab those. And while you're up there, if you look at the very top where the menu is, kind of in the middle, there's Office updates. Believe it or not, you need to update your Office version of Microsoft Office, too. So,
especially since now it's built into the operating system? Oh, no, that's another application.
Is that still windowsupdate.microsoft.com, and then you can go to Office updates from there?
Yes.
Oh, cool.
And then there's a lot of Office updates.
Well, especially Outlook. Anything that's for Outlook needs to be updated, because that's a big receiver of
And that's, yeah, the full version of Outlook is part of Office. So that's where you would get your updates for your mail, right?
Yeah. But on the bright side, Microsoft is actually looking at putting in spam or pop-up window blocking into IE, into the next service pack of XP.
Oh, that's revolutionary.
What a great idea.
Yeah.
I thought they were stopped development of IE.
This is the service pack to XP, so I don't know if it's showing up.
No, they stopped development for Windows or Macintosh. Oh,
No, they've been stopping real development for Internet Explorer. I think this is not along the lines of, I think browsers are users are starting to bleed off into other browsers. And this is such a high.
The big news was
item.
They stopped it for Apple, but they haven't mentioned that they're going to stop it for
this
Windows.
Was off of a message board, basically an IE engineer was talking about it.
Okay, until they make the announcement.
That they haven't had any fundamental new features to IE in how many years?
It's been a while.
Or announcements to new features.
Since XP came out.
But they have announced that they're going to release an operating system in 2 years or a year?
Yeah, it's codenamed Longhorn, and it's at least 2 years away, 2006.
Yeah. Longhorn, an animal theme. Interesting.
So, and it'll probably have most of the features that people are getting today in Panther.
Yes.
So, you know, it'd be great if Apple released a version of Panther for x86, put on some real hardware.
There's actually been talk about how OS X could be made to run. What's so funny?
I got to say, actually, I'm very impressed with the IBM, is it called the G5?
The 970.
The 970, yeah, it's very nice.
Yes. Apple. Yeah.
And the gigahertz hypertransport bus is a nice little add-on, even though the Hybrid Transport hasn't improved that speed. 800 megahertz per second is where it stands now, but interesting.
Any more news?
Sure. There's an e-voting glitch. Yeah, surprise! Over in the Indianapolis Star was saying that Boone County was using what's called a software made by Microvote. And it returned 144,000 votes. Unfortunately, the region or the district only had 19,000 registered voters.
Actually, that's a red flag.
Yeah, and after panicking and tracking down the bug, the actual number of votes turned out as 5,352. But still, there's some trepidation about electronic voting.
This is a discussion I would like to not get into right now. This is an entire show. I've got very strong feelings about electronic voting, and they're not in the positive. That said,
not all stories are negative about it, though. So
yes,
at the show,
Australia's doing a great job.
Like I said. So it's Canada. Canada uses pen and paper. So. Okay, another time. Let's go there. But for right now, we have a call. We have Dee in SoCal who has a question about Panther. Dee, welcome to GeekSpeak. Okay, we don't have Dee. Oh.
Hello?
I'm sorry, Dee. There we go.
Okay. Yeah. First of all, no Windows comments on a Panther show.
Oh, unfair. On Windows shows, we've done comments on Macs.
Go into those 80 ad infinitum just for that.
Yeah, but it was a negative, you know.
Mostly negative reviews.
Okay. Now, on to Panther. What I'd like to know is if you can, do you absolutely have to replace the Jaguar with Panther, or can you run them both on the machine? And also, what's your overall consensus of this Panther operating system?
So, Michael, can you run two operating systems concurrently?
From my knowledge, from what I've been able to see, you can have an install of Jaguar and Panther on at the same time, and you can choose via the startup disk preference pane what you want to boot from. I do not recommend it if it actually works in the first place. Because
you could do it, of course, by having it on two different partitions or two different drives.
Well. That
would work, and that's always worked for Apple.
I'd be curious to know, are there specific features in Jaguar that you would miss having if you went to Panther?
Say again?
He's wondering if there's specific things you're looking for in Jaguar that you would miss if you went to Panther. Wait, did I say that right?
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm not sure because I haven't had the time to sit down and really go through Panther and see.
Dee, your second part of the question was, what's your overall thought on Panther? My overall thought is it's better than Jaguar. Now, then the next step is, is the next version going to be a little more stable or something? Right now, I like Panther. I'm sold. Of course, I've only been using it for like 4 hours. But I like Panther. I think I would recommend it. And the next question is whether you want to go through the whole install process. Other people it takes a lot less time to install, like an hour. And it really depends on your machine. So it's not, don't think of my example of it being 4.5 hours to install as a common example. But I recommend it over Jaguar.
Yeah. You recommend Panther over Jaguar?
Yes.
And despite the four-hour install time?
despite the fact that I didn't sleep last night, yes, I still recommend it.
I've installed it on three machines.
Why are you saying that? Is it because, what I'm trying to get is, it's the stability issue, or is it functions?
Okay, the fast switching users, I actually am someone that would use that because I have a young son, a 2-year-old, and I sometimes let him play with my computer, and I don't want him erasing my files. So I have an account for him I switch over to. That I really like, that I don't have to uninstall my or stop my applications from running. I love Exposé. Exposé, switching between applications and finding your windows, is very useful. I'm a power user. I have windows open all the time. I like to be able to find the stuff fast. And then my last thing that I like is I like the finder. Oh, and applications launch faster. So those things combined make my user experience better, and I use my computer at least 8 hours a day, and therefore I like my user experience to be as best as it can be.
All right. Okay. Any specific applications, I guess, is what I was getting to, is like what particular applications seem to work better or faster, or do all applications, none in particular, or you've only been using it for 4 hours, so you
I've tried a lot of applications. I've launched a lot of applications, and I think that everything launches faster. I haven't used the applications a lot, so I don't know that, but things seem to be very good. And the speed at launching is fast.
If you use audio applications, you know, like the eMagic applications or Pro Tools or something like that, and you know, how those work, I don't know if you're into those, but those are the kind of applications that I'd be interested in, and perhaps that might be on another show or something. But in the meantime, please, please, no more of those PC comments. Those, you know, PC stands for perpetual crashing.
I'm sorry, Dee, but it is a free mic, and we do have to be a little generous to the other operating system.
Okay, but this is Panther.
Right, yeah, less than 1% of the population's using it.
Right. I actually have a question for the folks in-house. If you go to Panther, can you go backwards to Jaguar if something goes wrong?
You'd have to reinstall Jaguar.
Okay. But, I mean, is it possible without completely wiping your system?
No. Actually, it is. You can do a clean install. It will sort of disable everything else, and you'll have Jaguar again.
Okay. How reliable would that be afterwards, though?
I think it would actually be fine. Always recommended, though, as an erase install if you have the resources to do it.
All right. Dee, I hope we helped you out there. Thank you very much for your call.
One more thing for Dee, John, go ahead and say goodbye. But I did just launch Sound Studio, which is an application that we do recordings of the show with. It launched really, really fast. Normally, it's a very slow application, and it's a sound editing software. And I was able to record, and I can move tracks around. So it at least is interacting with my line input and my mic input on the machine. It seems to be fine.
Great. And please, if anyone else has had experience with 10.3 out there with different applications, go ahead and email the geeks at geekspeak.org, and we'll kind of compile all the comments. Maybe we'll give a little synopsis of the show next week. All right. We have Marilyn in Aptos.
Marilyn,
welcome to GeekSpeak. Let me try that again.
Okay. Hi.
Hi. Welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you. I like your idea of having an upcoming program on electronic voting and the controversy around that. So I just want to recommend you do that. And earlier you were talking about people changing their landlines and getting cell phones, and I'd like to put a word of caution out there that think of the deception of the cigarette industry and their assurances of safety when you think of cell phones.
And there you're referring to the radiation?
Yes, and I'll give you some specifics on studies and recommend some websites for people.
Can you just recommend a website, because we're running short on time?
Yeah, well, it causes DNA strand breakage, heart arrhythmias, calcium efflux, and it goes on, brain tumors. EMRnetwork.org.
EMRnetwork.org, okay.
And the other one is energyfields.org. And a book, Cellular Telephone Russian Roulette, by Robert C. Kane, who worked in the industry for 30 years. It's an historical and scientific perspective.
Thank you very much, Marilyn. We are running out of time here.
And a great program for that is Dr. Don's show on Sundays at 10 o'clock, excuse me.
Right.
Dr. Don has great information about health.
This is a big, you know, it's a big issue and a big controversy. And I know that there's a lawsuit in a school district elsewhere, Pennsylvania, I think it was.
For Wi-Fi.
Yeah, for Wi-Fi. So, you know, there is a lot of things we don't know. We have another call. We have, I think the name is Sam in Santa Cruz. Hold on a moment. Sam, are you with us?
I am.
And is that your name?
Yep.
Okay. What is your question today for GeekSpeak?
There was a feature in OS 9 which seemed to disappear when they switched to OS 10. I'm wondering if it's there at all, especially the new Panther, and that is the option of spinning down the hard drive while working in an application.
So putting the hard drive to sleep?
Just the hard drive, yeah, so you can keep on running in RAM.
Mm-hmm. A neat thing about OS 9 is actually there was a control strip module where you could purposely tell the machine, turn off the hard drive right now. That does not exist specifically in any version of OS 10, actually. However, it is an energy saver preference, so you can specify that, yes, allow the hard drive to spin down when it does not need to be used.
I've tried that, and it never spins down.
Mm-hmm. It does depend certainly on what you're doing at the time, if you're running off of AC power or battery. OS 10, because it's Unix, it uses the hard drive a lot differently, to say the least, so there's a greater chance that it may not spin down the hard drive, but it will still do it if it comes to the right case.
It sounds like it's only on a portable that would do it.
Certainly, yes. It works. Yeah.
Oh, well, I missed that feature. I would come back with it.
All right.
Thank you much.
Thank you very much for your call.
Now, I got some questions about other things, like VPN is supposedly supported, which is virtual private networking, which allows you to safely connect to another network through a public network. Where is that involved?
It's the application called Internet Connect, which is kind of a very small app that maybe people have never used before, but now it's become a lot more powerful with managing any sort of internet connections that you might have, and it does support the VPN type of connections. It's already built into Panther. You just need to specify the addresses and logins, and it'll work just fine.
Is there better support in Unix in 10.3? I know I use a few X11 applications. I use StarOffice, and I use GIMP, and another one called GRASS, which is a GIS emulator. Is there better support now?
I don't know of the specifics, but when we went from 10.1 to 10.2 Jaguar, there were a number of enhancements for the Unix core, as well as going from Jaguar to Panther.
Okay.
So you'll probably see some better support for that.
That's nice, because I know X11 is a little funky if you're not used to running Unix stuff, because the Finder interface is a little bit different.
What about X11? I used to have X11 on Jaguar, and when I installed Panther this morning, X11's not there. How is the X11 support?
X11 is actually an optional install with Panther. If you customize the install, you can choose to have X11 installed. If you want to do it later, you can just download it, or actually you can run the installer again.
That's very nice. And for those of you who don't know, Miles?
Yeah, X11 is the X-Window system. It allows you to run a program on another computer and display it on a local box, or vice versa. So basically the program, you're viewing it on one machine, but it's actually running on another.
And the great thing about it in the Mac environment is that applications are developed for X11 environment, and you can then run those applications, if they're compiled correctly, for Apple. So, for example, OpenOffice, which is a free competitor to Microsoft's Office suite, is available to run on Mac, and it works real well, and it's complete replacement, if you will, for the Office suite.
Yeah, basically any graphical user interface program any graphical program for Unix you can run on OS X as long as you have a Unix box of any type somewhere else on the network.
And there's a lot of them you can run in the terminal window too if they're not graphical interface. Any other things you'd like to add, Michael, about different applications that have maybe changed in OS X? Mm-hmm.
Safari actually got a small update. I think there are just some little bug fixes here and there, and we've mentioned pop-ups a whole lot, and I'm sure everyone enjoys the feature in Safari that you can just turn off. You can block pop-ups very easily. It works incredibly well. And, of course, there are all the iLife applications, iTunes, now support for Windows as well, for the iTunes Music Store. There's iPhoto and iMovie and all those things. iChat is now no longer in beta, iChat AV, working with iSight and doing audio chats and so on.
Also, Mail has changed. It now supports Exchange. Didi, our geek in New York, is aiming us and telling us some information. So Exchange support in Mail, which means that Mail can now connect to a Microsoft Exchange server.
Anything else you'd like to add?
There's so many more things.
Yeah. lots of little things here and there that really add up to a great OS.
So it seems like the general synopsis for today is there's some cool things that are different. There's some things that they're still working on. So maybe waiting a little bit is not a bad thing right now. Unless you just got to have the cutting edge, latest and greatest stuff, which I usually run right out and get, but I learned my lesson. I've been slapped down a couple times with different OS upgrades.
And do the archive install. It takes longer, but it's safer. And one last thing about it, make sure you have backup of your data, and that goes for anybody on any operating system. Hard drives, it's not about if they'll fail, it's when they fail.
Great. This program is supported by a grant from Seagate Technology. Seagate is a worldwide supplier of disk drives for PC and server and innovations for products like the Microsoft Xbox, digital video recorders, and digital jukeboxes. Information is at Seagate.com. The geeks this morning were Lyle Troxell, Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, and special guest Michael Peracci, who is, the campus rep for Apple at UCSC. Our producer is Maggie Cleveland, answering the thank you. Thank you very much for being here, geeks.
Our pleasure.
It's great to be here, John. Thanks.
And thank you for all of those who participated via phone or via email. Thank you for making Geek Speak what it is. Without your input, it would just be us geeking out, and who wants to listen to that?
We do.
Thank you, Sean. Sean is reminding me why I pot the microphones down for all the geeks before the end of the show. This was Central Coast Public Radio, Santa Cruz, KVDH, San Arturo, or on the web at KUSP.org. For Geek Speak, I'm John Tracy. Coming up next is Fine Print.